Welcome back to the Healthy Conversations podcast. Matt is out this week. I am in, producer Johnny at the helm. Today, we are going to be doing a highlight episode of the Healthy Conversations podcast, looking at four different clips of past episodes of the show, namely from TH Med, Brent Russell, Dr. Eric Bricker, and Mr. Mike Sanborn. All great episodes. And today we are going to be focusing on exclusively healthcare. We'll be touching on clips that talk about physician burnout, trends in direct primary care, as well as other trends in employer healthcare. And finally, healthcare price transparency tools that are available now and what we might be seeing in the future. Before we jump in, don't forget to subscribe to the Healthy Conversations podcast, as well as check out the link in the description below to sign up to Matt's newsletter. Every couple of weeks, Matt is sending out a newsletter giving out his thoughts on the world of healthcare, where it's going, what we're seeing in the industry right now, as well as his book recommendations and podcast recommendations. It's been really great. I've enjoyed seeing the first couple that he sent out, so don't forget to subscribe to that. Without further ado, let's start off the highlight episode with TH Med.
I mean, you talked about it a lot in the beginning, physician burnout. You sent over some numbers that threw out as high as 45% of physicians surveyed reported feeling the effects of burnout. Can you explain that a little further and how that affects care across the board?
Yeah, of course. That was a rather interesting number that I had sent over to you initially, and I was quite shocked as well. When I'd read the study that of the 15,000 physicians that were surveyed, 45% of them had reported feeling the effects of burnout. And there's been an interesting shift with this new generation of physician coming into the workplace that the number one career goal is now work-life balance Overcompensation, right? So in the past, compensation was the number one motivator, and now that work-life balance has become, it's surpassed compensation as being the number one goal in this particular career. Now, with what we do here at MediStar, with providing locum tenens for coverage, what that enables clinicians to do is take control of their own schedule, right? And it frees up the hours that the full-time providers have to put the freedom back in their lives. And, yeah, and of course, allow them the opportunity to rediscover their passion, if you will, for practicing medicine. And the solution that we provide is exactly what it is that is neat that this industry needs to help sustain the growth of physicians and further encourage new physicians to come into the practice. We've seen healthcare, the executives and the administrators are now starting to understand. Primarily, they've heard the physicians complaining enough. I need a break. I'm seeing too many patients, and it's starting to trickle down throughout the health system. And it's starting to trickle down from a financial standpoint. When you have practices, hospitals that have employed physicians that no longer want to work there because they are just being worked to the end, have no relief whatsoever. These healthcare executives, the administrators, are now starting to understand the value of utilizing locum tenens so they can retain their current staff. That's what we've seen. That's what I've seen over the last, 15 years of working in this industry is there is a tremendous growth in locum tenens. And this is why.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like your sales pitch to the provider of why they should consider it. I mean, I'm curious, if these guys and girls are so burned out, like how many patients are they typically seeing? I mean, I've heard numbers for primary care physicians kind of across the board being 4,000 to 5,000, 6,000, and that in the model for direct primary care being under 1,000. But like, I mean, can you provide some context of what that burnout looks like, how many patients a typical physician is seeing on a daily basis for that, call it 10 minutes?
Sure, of course. Again, it primarily comes back to what specialty in mm-hmm. particular. If we're talking about specifically primary care, that being pediatrics, family practice, internal medicine, that type of setting, a typical, 8-hour average is going to be anywhere from 20 to 30 patients seen in a standard clinic. Now, when you branch out further into urgent care, per se, we have physicians and nurse practitioners and PAs that are seeing upwards of, in some cases, close to 50 patients per day.
Yeah.
And that is a significant number of patients to see in an 8-hour day.
Yeah, that is quite a few people.
And what that creates is it creates more room for error and mistakes. So as the patient count, the number of physicians decreases, and the number of patients that need to be seen increases, well, somebody has to see these patients. Mm-hmm. And that just means you're cramming more patients into a shorter period of time. And, it's going to create additional errors.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You guys have a unique perspective and some insights within healthcare. I'd be interested to hear what trends you guys are seeing that do excite you outside of the ones that call it scare you as far as shortages and burnout. But are you guys seeing anything super cool happening within healthcare that we should see here in the next couple of years?
Well, I know that we're, entering an era where we need more providers, period, that mm-hmm. With that, we're seeing more an increase in nurse practitioners and physician assistants to help out with this growing gap in coverage for primary care. So with that, we also have, we're adding more residency programs, to which we hope that increases the number of physicians that will be entering into that specific state. And then with that also, we're going to have more providers that are going to be able to have more licenses. In other words, having multiple state licenses that can often drive to different locations throughout the U.S. and take care of these particular needs as they grow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think this is John Martin, the CEO of TH Med, and I think one of the most exciting stories I've seen recently is NYU's medical school is now free. One of the founders of Home Depot put together a $550 million endowment so that he could get the best and brightest to go to medical school, not come out with so much debt that it was going to take you 10 years. So, you go through medical school, there's 4 years, then you have your residency, and then you have your specialty training. And so you could be 33, 34 years old before you start making dime one, and you're $500,000-$600,000 in debt. Super successful people putting together that kind of endowment to incentivize our best and brightest to go back to medical school to be doctors, I think is one of the most exciting stories I've seen in years.
Now let's jump into the episode with Brent Russell, the VP of Business Development and co-founder of DPC Healthcare, talking about trends in direct primary care.
A lot of people might say, oh, I've got telemedicine through my TPA or United Healthcare. It sounds like the biggest difference is the relationship with your doctor there. That's who you're dealing with in that care team. Is that how you guys think of it? Or how would you say, you guys are different from that telemedicine perspective.
And I think there's a lot of differences from a clinical standpoint that I can't speak to very eloquently, but I'll just say, you know, in my personal history, when I've called in to a telemedicine provider, you know, I know I'm going to get antibiotic, you know, that's pretty much the solution.
Yeah.
And here there's obviously much more control. And also the ability to follow up quickly. I mean, we have right now, our average number of encounters over 1 year for a member is 7.8. 7.8 encounters with that doctor over a year for our entire population. Now, that encounter may be, you know, us sending a message, you know, to that patient, to that member, and just checking up on them. Hey, how are you feeling today? How's the weight loss program going? You know, do you need any new recipes? Do you want to come in and hop on the body composition and see where you're at? We are engaging with people so much. In fact, our focus is how can we go out there and get, you know, increase that engagement? Because the more that we can pull them into this relationship, pull them onto the battlefield with us, you know, the more educated they're going to be. You know, we've had diabetic patients who sat across the table from us and said, look, I had no idea. I've had diabetes for 15 years, 20 years. I never knew what diabetes really was, you know, chemically and all those things in my body. What am I doing that's impacting
that? Nobody's explained it to them.
Yeah, nobody sits down and has that, you know, educational piece. So when they sit down and they have those conversations, there's a lot of data that's shared back and forth. And it really just kind of changes that entire engagement. I think with any telemedicine provider, you know, that's been a piece that's missing. You know, but there's no doubt, you know, being able to pick up the phone and then schedule a visit quickly it's still better than nothing. You know, it's still getting access. We're just trying to provide access to the best possible care.
I recently sat down with Matt over at MedStar, and his biggest piece of advice for employers as well as employees locally, really anywhere for that matter, was simply to better educate kind of their employees on healthcare. I mean, it sounds like you're preaching pretty much the same thing. I mean, is there anything you would kind of advise that you've seen from your time in healthcare for a local mid-size employers that they can get better at?
Well, you know, the employee wellness programs and all the different solutions that are out there. I can't tell you how many employees, and you do this for a living, you know, meet with employers and kind of help them guide them through those decisions. That's not my background. You know, I had no clue how many quote unquote solutions there were out there. You know, it's insane. And to have, you know, we met with an employer recently that their entire quote unquote employee wellness program was basically just a user interface to help, I guess, translate all the different benefits that they're offering, the 75 different solutions. We're going to put these into a package that actually shows you how to use them.
Yeah.
You know, and that was their wellness program. I was like, well, I thought a wellness program.
That sounds like a benefit guide.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that employers are very, I think they're varied in their level of awareness of how important it is to have an engaged physician in the room. Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest values that we've brought to the table here in North Texas is when our employer group partners are having those conversations before renewal, they've got a physician at the table for the first time. And so even for a mid-sized employer, you know, we're clearly the opportunities for the larger, partially self-funded groups are significant. But for that small group, to have a physician at the table, you know, that's also talking about, look, you've got 25% of your employees are diabetic. What is our approach going to be, you know, clinically? And here's some suggestions that we have. And so really kind of supercharging that that conversation, it's been excellent. But a lot of times they just don't have time. You know, they just don't have time for those conversations. I would just encourage you to get engaged with, you know, first off, a benefit advisor that is open-minded and is aware of big, massive movements like
that. Yeah, what's out there.
Yeah. So
good to know. Are there any exciting trends that you're seeing in healthcare outside of DPC that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, it's funny, you know, we look at trends in healthcare that are positive and they're making a difference on a large national scale, those trends are aligned perfectly with some of our biggest challenges. One of the biggest challenges that we've had over our first year and a half in existence is so many employer groups have transitioned over to a high deductible health plan with an HSA. Dealing with the IRS right now, there is poor definition, poor translation of what direct primary care is from mm-hmm. an IRS standpoint. So it's not that membership is not considered a qualified medical expense.
Yeah.
Even though it's your labs, it's your physical therapy, it's your doctor, it's all your primary care services. So luckily last week, we did see some positive momentum with the executive order that was signed. It spoke to a lot of healthcare related topics like HRAs and some other pieces, but very clearly defined in there were the words that we waited for, a couple of years to see. Direct primary care is a medical, should be treated as a medical service.
And you can use your HSA. Yeah.
And so we'll see. In Washington, I saw, I think, three probably is in that one paragraph. But hopefully over the next 60 to 90 days, we should have some pretty good, exciting information from the Treasury to speak to that. But, I think that as the model has grown nationally, we're able to leverage that size to push back and to make certain changes. Another big change right now that is trying to be pushed through here in Texas is point of care dispensing. 45 other states nationally, you can go into your physician's office and pick up your, blood pressure medication there on site. And, the physician can just dispense there. Texas is not one of those states right now. And so while many direct primary care clinics nationally include some of your basic generic medications as part of that membership, which vastly, which only removes another financial barrier. Mm-hmm. It removes the convenience, it improves the convenience, and it connects that physician to the patient and helps them understand what they're doing from a medication standpoint even better. There's some positive changes, I think, heading our way from that perspective. But just the sheer size, in order to have any credibility with a large employer, we've got to have a footprint, whether we want to or not. The pace at which we see direct primary care clinics popping up, and the fact that they are independent, there's no one big, huge, massive group. There's not a biggest and the best. There's a lot of best out there, and we're all pushing each other. One thing that I think we're really doing a phenomenal job of bringing into the direct primary care world is from a reporting standpoint. We were built to work with employers, so we understand we've got to. Even though it's not necessarily the most effective manner to talk about, utilization and things of that nature, we still track CPT codes, and ICD-10 codes, and talk about utilization and provide that reporting back to the employer and saying, look, not only did you see a reduction in your cost, but here's why. And we can also follow through, whether it's with, risk assessment scores or your typical HEDIS measures and the quality metrics and things that employers are so used to seeing, we're able to speak that same language. And that's a piece that had been lacking, I think, in direct primary care. So when it gets to a TPA or third-party administrator or working with a carrier, we're able to kind of integrate with their reporting.
Yeah, that's cool.
To greatly show, when we come into a relationship, we'll do a deep dive into their claims analysis. And so we'll say, let's look at your last 2 years of claims. We know all the CPTs. There's close to 400 CPT codes that are included in our membership. Let's do an analysis. Here's what you spent last year. Here's what you spent it on. And here's what it would look like, this year. But even going past that, your relationship began where year one, year two, year three, we're looking at it and still able to show them, here's the amount of care that's being delivered. Here's the number of encounters each member's having. Here's the disease states that we should be concerned with. We can talk on their same language.
Next up is Dr. Eric Bricker talking about convincing people to come over to Compass, as well as trends in employer healthcare.
I'm curious, as the chief medical officer for Compass, how did you guys initially convince some of these larger middle market employers to come on board in the first place?
Well, I think that it it's important for anybody that's trying to push for change in healthcare to understand what's referred to as the technology adoption lifecycle model. And this is a very famous model that was written about by an author named Jeffrey Moore in his book, Crossing the Chasm, in which to say, look, anytime you are promoting behavior change in any area, and the original research on this was actually done with farmers and their adoption of new crops, you'll have a bell-shaped curve where, you know, starting on the left-hand side, you have the early adopters, and then you have the pragmatists, and then you have the conservatives, and then you have the skeptics. And we at Compass didn't have some sort of, you know, magical Rolodex of who the early adopters were. We just talked to a ton of people. And one of the great things about Jeffrey Moore's book is that, look, if it falls along what's referred to as a Gaussian curve or a normal distribution, then, you know, the cutoff between the early adopters and the pragmatists is about one standard deviation. So it's going from the mean, so it's going to be about 17% of the population. And then the pragmatists are 32%, the conservatives are 33%, and then the skeptics are the last 17%. And so if you knocked on 100 doors, you would probably get 17 people that kind of got it and would want to do it. So then it really became a numbers game. And we just had to talk to a lot of people. And it was, of course, what every person in sales experiences. It was an incredibly humbling experience.
Absolutely.
When, like, 83 out of 100 people have no interest in talking to you. So it's like, okay. And I learned very quickly that you just have to have thick skin, and you just got to keep, you know, smiling and dialing, and, you know, just talking to lots of people. And it's kind of like baseball. If you can hit it, you know, 3 times out of 10, then you get into the Hall of Fame. And that is kind of how we start. And so, at Chili's and T-Mobile and Chili's Maggiano's and all these other, you know, great places, they had a specific, you know, they kind of, you know, after the early adopters, you get the pragmatists, and that's really where you start getting the larger volume of client base. And really those pragmatists, the key to them is they have a discrete problem that they are looking to solve. And, you know, they're not, you know, the early adopters, I mean, they're just into something because it's new and it's cool and it's going to give them an advantage over their competition, et cetera. Whereas the pragmatist is like, hey, I've got pain and I need to do something about that pain in the near future. And that's where the pain specifically was, hey, I really need to move my employees to a consumer-directed health plan with an HSA or an HRA, either because that's my strategic vision or I got a healthcare cost problem or, you know, yada, yada, yada. And my employees have no tool to help them in that transition. And so that's where they said, okay, well, we can turn to Compass to solve that discrete problem that we have.
Gotcha. That makes total sense. Back to A Healthcare Z, I mean, I would be curious to see or to hear what surprises you've seen in the past 6 months of doing these videos outside of the fashion advice you seem to be getting.
Oh. Yes, thank you. Thank you for that joke. I'm still trying to tweak my wardrobe to please the audience. And I'll tell you, one of the most recent developments is that, of course, you know, it is amazing. It's amazing to me that, of course, in an age where we have, you know, incredibly inexpensive video that can be transmitted all over the world. So you can just communicate with almost anybody via video. And of course, I intended this for a U.S. audience, but because I post my videos on LinkedIn, there's obviously a very large global audience for LinkedIn. And my newest, like within the past 2 weeks, fastest growing segment of viewers are actually computer programmers in India that specifically work for a large U.S. health insurance company. Because they, of course, I don't want to say outsourced because they are actually employees of the company, but they have, you know, they have globalized their software development, right? Makes sense. A lot of companies do that, right? So how does software development typically work? Well, the product people have a sheet of specs that they give to a computer programmer, and the computer programmer creates the code to meet the specs. Now, typically the computer programmer has no idea what those specs mean or like why they're creating the code. And so here it is. All these software programmers are like, oh, this video actually explains why I'm doing what I'm doing. No one ever told me this before. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And the reason it's awesome is because if you talk to a software developer, they will tell you, if I actually understand the end reason for why it is I'm doing what I'm doing, then I can actually make much better software. Because what you're telling me to do, there might be actually a better way to do it. And if you tell me why I'm doing it, then I'm probably more apt to figure out that better way as opposed to just, you know, cranking out lines of code to meet your specs. So that is surprise number one that has happened.
Well, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I had some questions around trends in employer healthcare if you want to change gears quickly.
Sounds great.
What companies do you think should be on the radar of like a mid-sized Texas employer, like Simple Pay? Met with those guys a couple weeks ago. They seem to be doing some very innovative things. Did you have any other companies that might not be on a bunch of people's radar, but should be here in the next 6 months to a year?
I will tell you that I am, you know, heavily biased in favor of Simple Pay, because when Compass sold, our CEO, Scott Chainvogel, and I left, and Scott is the president and the main force behind Simple Pay. And so, of course, I think, you know, very highly of Scott, and I think very high, he was a very smart guy. He's an incredible problem solver, and his will is just amazing. I mean, he's just able, he kind of has that Steve Jobs will. He can just like will things into existence. So I think I've noticed in, you know, I love mid-market and small group employers, and that's because in those organizations, they're small to the point where the broker consultant and HR actually have a voice with the CEO. Because ultimately, the company's budget and priority, they really all roll up to that one person, right? Mm-hmm. And in these very large organizations that we would work with, like even the head of HR, like, they would almost never talk to the CEO. Like it was very hard for them to prioritize what they were doing within human resources with the CEO. But in small and mid-market groups, they're much more accessible. And a lot of brokers and consultants actually meet with the CEO because, you know, we're talking an organization with 50 people, 150 people, 1,000 people. Okay. So with that being said, what I experienced over the years with the brokers and consultants that we worked with was that employers have very unique healthcare profiles or footprints. They're not all the same. And what I mean by that is they're not all the same in terms of their claims drivers. If you have a company with a lot of young employees, labor and delivery might be one of their main claims drivers. Where if you have a company with more middle-aged and older employees, then it'll be like cardiovascular or musculoskeletal will be like the main drivers. Two, the distribution of the employees, so very important. Are they highly centralized at a municipality? They're all, or are they a very spread out, you know, sales organization? I mean, there are mid-market companies that are, let's say, headquartered in Texas, but have employees all over the country, and they're only like a 200 employee company. We had one of our early customers. This is the coolest customer ever. They're the company that actually does the sampling displays in grocery stores. So you go in and you're like, "Hey, try the Swedish meatball," right? That's actually not a grocery store employee that does that. It's this company that, and so they would have employees all over the country in grocery stores promoting the Swedish meatballs. And so obviously the distribution of those employees is very different than a highly centralized municipality. And so I promise you, Matt, I will answer your question eventually. So those things in regards to the types of claims they generate, the geographic location of the employees, there's other dynamics as well, but for the sake of brevity, I won't go into all of them. That means that each, you know, HR person and their broker benefit consultant, they really need to tailor the solution to their specific profile, if you will. So the analogy I use is kind of like a doctor and a patient. And
yeah, so I heard that this morning.
The HR person are like, they're like the doctors, and you have to diagnose the group, right? And you know, for some people, then, you know, hey, you need a blood pressure pill. For somebody else, like, hey, you need a cholesterol pill. For somebody else, like, hey, you need a diabetes pill. But you don't give everybody a blood pressure pill because not everybody has high blood pressure, right? That wouldn't make any sense. And you would never expect that from a physician, nor would you expect that from a broker consultant. And so that's where really you see, and of course I'm biased towards navigation because that's what Compass does, right? So you see navigation and transparency. You see near-site on-site clinic. You see reference-based pricing. You see second opinion programs. And I could go on and on, but you basically need to take that that toolbox and apply that to the employer. Now, I will tell you that when I was a vendor, like I almost feel like vendor's like a pejorative term, right?
It's like, oh, yeah, for sure.
But like, what would I want an employer, if my role and the employer's roles were reversed and I was buying the vendor's services, what would I, especially having, you know, started a vendor, what would I really want to know about that vendor is, of course, I would want to know their sales pitch, right? And you'd want to talk to their salesperson, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You want to learn about the fit of the product. But I actually feel like you get past that pretty quickly. In other words, you know, am I evaluating a solution that fits with what it is I'm looking for? So, for example, if you have a highly concentrated group of employees in like a municipality, school system, et cetera, like a near-site on-site clinic, like that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. For that company that does the Swedish meatball selling in grocery stores, that makes no sense whatsoever, because their employees are spread so thin that there is no centralized place where you can have people, right? So In terms of the fit, you can get to that fairly quickly. I think what you then need to get at is, what is the ability of that vendor to deliver, right? To execute. Okay. So I feel like that is where the broker consultant can really add a lot of value in terms of vetting that vendor, right? Because the HR people are very busy. To a certain extent, the HR people are paying the broker and consultant to do that vetting for them. And I really think it involves lifting up the hood and kicking the tires and in detail examining that vendor. What do I mean by that? I mean, one, you literally go and see it. Like, you got to see it with your own eyes. You got to see the people working, and you have to watch them work.
I agree.
And that means like walking around. And that means like, hey, when I walk around, like, I'm just going to talk to people. And I'm going to, whoever my tour guide is, I'm like, hey, I appreciate your tour. Can I go up and I talk to people and just ask them like what they're doing? Because when I do that, like, I want to hear those employees talk. Like, I literally want to hear them talk. Why do I want to literally hear them talk? Because the ability to execute to a certain extent, to a large extent, is based upon the competency of the people at the company.
Mm-hmm.
So as a broker and consultant, it's actually really important to vet the competency of the people at the company. I don't want to talk to them. And I mean, you're a smart guy. Your colleagues are smart people. You would know in talking to them if they actually know what they're talking about.
All right, time to round it out with Mr. Mike Sanborn talking about healthcare price transparency tools, as well as working in the nonprofit space.
And, you know, obviously, working for a nonprofit is very different. Could you kind of describe what that's like?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked for both for-profit and not-for-profit organizations in my career. You know, I think certainly I enjoy, on the healthcare side of things, working for a not-for-profit entity for a variety of reasons. One of the big ones is we don't have shareholders to commit to and to ultimately respond to. Our shareholders are the public at large and essentially the communities that we serve, the patients and future patients. And so for me, what is unique, I think, about not-for-profit healthcare is any dollar that we make is reinvested into the facility and reinvested into the communities that we serve via new services and new programs, outreach, wellness, all kinds of other programs that might not otherwise be available or be possible if we weren't allowed to have that reinvestment. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I've certainly enjoyed and really, I think, relish as it relates to the not-for-profit environment.
Healthcare is going to be a big topic in the upcoming election. What do you see as kind of the biggest challenges? I mean, from a broker standpoint, it's obviously the cost and things like that from an employer standpoint. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the federal government certainly, not so much the state government. I think the state government kind of has a little bit more logical approach, but the federal government a lot of times tries to look for large solutions to complex problems rather than, I think, chipping away at some of the opportunities that we, everybody, regardless of your political persuasion, would agree is a problem and trying to fix that smaller problem rather than, you know, some big, massive program. So for a perfect example is with the ACA. Parts of that have been dismantled. Parts of it, most would argue, weren't that great. But lots of other parts, like eliminating pre-existing conditions, was a fantastic program. Why not just pass a bill that eliminates pre-existing conditions and solve that problem rather than try to create a huge program that really, you know, even to this point, a lot of states are not on board with the ACA, Texas being one of those states that really didn't sign on with a lot of the provisions of the ACA. And you can debate the value of that decision all day long. But I think there would have been ways at the margins, focusing on some of the more important things to the healthcare consumer, for the federal legislation to really make a positive difference and to really have a big impact, rather than looking for a big omnibus bill that's going to solve or try to solve every single problem.
Makes sense. Along that idea of small solutions and chipping away at that problem, what would you recommend for an average consumer here in Tarrant County to kind of become a better consumer, as well as like any recommendations for employer groups that you've seen?
Well, I think on the consumer side of things, healthcare is one of those services that most people, the public, really doesn't pay much attention to until they ultimately need it or until a family member of theirs needs that service. And I think that's really unfortunate because a lot of times healthcare needs are emergent. So you break a leg or you have a heart attack or, you know, something significant and emergent happens. And all of a sudden, you've got seconds or minutes to make a decision. And a lot of times that includes appropriately calling 911. And so in those cases, your decision may not even be made by you. Mm-hmm. A EMS provider, certainly here in Tarrant County, will ask you, do you have a preferred facility? And unless you've done some homework in advance, you may or may not even have a preferred facility or a cardiac surgeon if you have a heart attack or a cardiologist. And so I think people, the public needs, consumers in general, need to really think about healthcare decisions and what they would want to do and where they would want to go, and talk to their primary care physician if they have one. Hopefully everyone has one, but talk to their primary care physician about, you know, if I ever need a cardiologist, who would you recommend, or who are the three or four that you think I should look at? Not that you ever would, but especially if you've got a family history or any kind of, you know, predetermined issues that might think, you know, higher cancer risk in your family or anything like that, you might want to look into oncology and oncology services in Tarrant County. And what are the other resources that I might need to consider as it relates to the services I might need? I think doing that homework on the front end, even though you may never, ever need it, is really valuable. I think likewise with employers, kind of looking at it from a different perspective, employers, I think, also need to do that homework, talk to peers that might be in a similar type of environment, you know, a similar type of workforce, for example, whether it be young or old or highly skilled, less skilled, whatever it might be. But talk to peer organizations to say, hey, how are you tackling this problem? And I think certainly through the chamber and a lot of other venues, you can develop those relationships and have those conversations. And I think, again, doing the homework, you may not be in the market to change insurance providers or change, make major changes as it relates to the health plan that year. But doing the homework in advance is a lot easier than saying, oh my gosh, here it comes. Now we got to start this process. So I think that pre-planning, whether you're a consumer or an employer, is highly valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Along the same lines of doing your homework and kind of price transparency, things like that, there's a ton of tools out there, but I know a lot of employees as well as employers have trouble when it does come to price transparency. I guess as a provider, kind of, can you shed some light on that or tools that we could be using to become better consumers?
Yeah, I think there's two things. There's what's available now and what's going to be available. I think both the state legislature and the federal government is looking at more legislation related to price transparency, which is a good thing. I think overall, price transparency is an outstanding thing. As a consumer of healthcare from time to time, even though I'm in the business, I typically never know exactly what a procedure is going to cost or who all the providers are that were involved in that procedure mm-hmm. and what the various bills are going to be. And so healthcare, even for those of us that live it every day, is very, very confusing. And I think likewise for both consumers and employers, it's very, very confusing. So D Magazine, about a month or two ago, published a document that showed what it cost at various facilities around DFW for a knee replacement surgery. Pretty common procedure. Mm-hmm. And it was a fourfold difference depending on where you went for knee replacement surgery. And so I think there are more and more tools out there nowadays that allow patients to shop around, that allow employers to shop around and better understand what the costs are that are going to be rolled up into a health plan. And I think in the very near future, there's going to be even more in that with some of the state and federal mandates that occur related to price mm-hmm. transparency. So I think the more, for example, a good example in a smaller scale is urgent care. Most urgent cares you go to now are one-stop shop. You may have one or two fees, but generally speaking, you know you're going to walk in there and they will tell you right up front, you're going to pay $30 for this visit or $40. Mm-hmm. And if you need an x-ray, you're going to pay an additional $60 or whatever that number is based on what your health plan covers. We need to get to that, I think, for all types of healthcare, and I think eventually we will.
One of the things we talked about a couple months back was bundled pricing. Mm-hmm. Is that along the same lines of, all right, you've got this knee replacement, why can't that just be a bundled fee? Do you see that kind of coming in the future as well?
I do. Most people don't know this, but hospitals are already paid that way. Most of the, certainly Medicare started what they called the DRG, the diagnosis-related group, where you get a tiered payment based on acuity. Usually there's three levels for a DRG, three different DRGs for an individual disease, say pneumonia. Mm-hmm. You're going to get paid one price for that no matter how much you spend on a particular patient, no matter how much the cost of care is for that particular patient. And so hospitals have been living under that model for a long time. Most insurance companies have moved to that type of pricing. Mm-hmm. And so I think then the next iteration of that is to push that down to the consumer level, because we all know pretty much what it costs on average to deliver care for pneumonia for a patient, depending on the three different types of pneumonia a patient can have from a severity perspective. So why can't we then push that out to the patient as it relates to ultimate pricing for services? I think we're pretty close to it. I think most healthcare organizations, certainly now much more than they did a decade ago, have a better idea on what the overall costs are. We've developed standardized protocols that provide the best care for every patient every time, regardless of what's wrong with them. And so we've done a lot on the quality side to eliminate bad outcomes and things like that, just mm-hmm. across healthcare as an industry. And I think the organizations that are able to do that the best are going to be able to better provide the most cost-effective care for patients and health plans down the road.
Thanks for tuning in to the first of four highlight reels that we're going to be putting together for you all of the Healthy Conversations podcast. The next highlight reel will be focusing on company culture, so be on the lookout for that. Don't forget to subscribe once again to Healthy Conversations, as well as check out Matt's newsletter in the link below. Subscribe to that. Every few weeks, you'll get a great email in your inbox talking about Matt's view on the world of healthcare, where it's going, trends that he's seeing, and highlighting news stories, as well as his book and podcast recommendations. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.